I'm Skyelle Hughes, and on today's 360 View, we are going to look at the various effects masks have had on our youngest generation. And is America the only country lowering its academic standards post-pandemic? Let's get started. America is now pushing to lower academic standards in schools. We are seeing claims math is racist. High schools in Virginia are getting rid of advanced diplomas, saying they are discriminatory. The entire AP and IB placement programs are all under scrutiny. Meanwhile, American school systems are already way behind schools in Europe. China and India are actually raising their academic standards in schools. Plus, the Centers for Disease Control quietly lowered developmental milestones for children aged 2 and 3. Now, this all comes after proven studies show children have developmental issues due to masking. Joining us now is Dr. Marion Mass, founder of Practicing Physicians of America, and a pediatrician who has practiced in suburban Philadelphia for 21 years. Thanks for joining us, doctor. Now, this was the first major event in present day, which touched every aspect of life, all in regards to our children. What did we actually get right about how we handled the pandemic?
I love that question so much because I like to be a positive person, and I feel like everyone has talked about what we got wrong. Something that I saw happening early on in the pandemic was people started to do more everyday, real hands-on things with their children. I read about people baking sourdough bread, cooking with their children, gardening with their children, reading with their children. And these are things that, you know, I have always supported as a pediatrician and a mom. In my community, I've helped put gardens in the schools. I've helped talk to the schools about the importance of gardening and cooking with your kids and nutrition. And the fact that doing these things is really giving kids their actual hands-on experience of doing things. We don't think about it, but when children are so tied up online, on screens, and they're not doing things physically, I don't think they feel the same sense of accomplishment that we might when we do something virtual. I mean, children are concrete at many ages and need to see the effects of their labor. So I think this was something that was really wonderful. I also saw parents, well, this one was out of necessity. You know, of course, there were no activities anymore, right? And everyone talks about the modern parenting model, the modern model of our children being so overscheduled. And I think for kids, this gave them a little bit of a breath of fresh air. Of course, there was probably a little too much of that, but I think it really did help bring families together and give children some building blocks of doing actual hands-on activities. I thought that was wonderful.
What lessons did we learn which will actually help us if ever presented a situation like this again?
I hope that we learn the lesson that that we need to take a deep breath and not turn circular firing squads on one another. You know, I'm still feeling the after effects of the anger that came out of COVID. I feel like it's receding a little bit, but I feel like people were so angry at one another. Everyone had a different loss because of COVID, right? You know, if you lost a parent, if you lost a caregiver, if you lost a brother, a sister, that was a huge loss, of course. But then there were people that lost chunks of their lives. Children lost chunks of their childhood. And I think it was very easy for people to go to a point of anger, but not try to respect one another's losses. And I hope we have learned the lesson that, you know, the anger and the blaming and the shaming, it doesn't help. It drives wedges between humans, and that's a terrible place for us to be. I've known about families that were just ripped apart from this. It's so sad.
Now, there was a lot of confusion. It was actually very rampant during the pandemic, all this regarding the do's and don'ts for parents. Did you, as a physician, ever question what was being put out? And did doctors actually have the freedom to differ in opinion for their patients?
I felt as though if I questioned the right or the option of someone to choose to have friends over, to choose to socialize. I felt shamed myself, you know, sometimes from members of my own profession. It grew to a point where I didn't want to even tell people what I was doing myself. You know, very early on, you remember potting became like a very popular thing to do a couple months into the pandemic. I didn't have a name for it, but I told my children to pod right from the get-go. Must have been like a week or 2 weeks in, that you are not going to thrive and prosper and grow and be a mentally healthy person if you're cut off from everyone. And, you know, I told them, like, who we need social distancing from is everyone underneath our roof here. Otherwise, we might, like, not be so happy with one another. You know, it's not a healthy environment. I remember I did an interview with a Philadelphia newspaper, maybe about May of 2020. I got a lot of angry commentary on it. It was as though, you know, I'm not allowed to discuss this. I thought that was just so unwarranted. You know, I'm a professional. Others are professionals that were coming back and lambasting me. You know, we made our own decisions about, you know, vaccinations, and we made them prudently, and we made them after reviewing the literature. And I felt as though if you questioned, nope, must get vaccine one, must get vaccine two, and you must get them 3 weeks apart from each other, or else you're some kind of crazy anti-vaxxer. I mean, that's just, excuse my vernacular, but that's nuts. And what that did, in addition to have like thought and discussion tamped down, people who were watching, I think they stopped trusting. Because if people are going to insist on a narrative instead of a discussion when we're in a novel medical situation, people who are watching and doubting themselves are going to stop trusting the people who are attempting to lead the discussion. I kind of called them, sometimes I felt as though there were these self-appointed media, social media anointed gurus. And I don't even know what a covert expert is, really. I guess, you know, the people that are infectious ID physicians, that are virologists, I want to hear what they have to say about what's different with this virus and what's not. But people who run around and say that they're mask experts on COVID and various other forms of experts in a situation that's new and novel, when there's so much information that we really don't know, the people I trust are the people who are willing to have conversations and to state, I don't know, I'm not sure. Those are people that I tend to really trust.
Now, what changes have you observed in your own patients which are different than pre-pandemic times?
So, and you know, understand that, you know, every day I go into, well, not every day, the days that I work part-time clinically in an urgent care setting situation. So I'm meeting new patients all the time, and it's a rapid fire kind of setting. So parents like to talk about this. And as I'm logging onto my computer, there's always a few minutes to talk. I think one of the things that certainly held throughout the pandemic was the increasing amount of anxiety, especially anxiety and depression that was felt by children throughout the pandemic. And the worst of all forms was the increase that I knew about of suicide attempts. So we live in a very small suburban area, and there's a small hospital, and I used to work in that hospital and used to spend a good amount of time in the ER. A teenage suicide attempt was something that happened a couple times a year, and the staff was always shaken. I was told that that particular hospital had 5 attempts in one weekend. Think about that. I mean, I feel as though I pull up expert opinions, and you know, they'll say, we've looked at the numbers and there haven't been as many suicides as was thought during the pandemic, but I can't ignore something that's right in front of my face, something that a friend is telling me about, that they've experienced it. And I don't even know what I say when I look at numbers, and I have to read them very carefully to know that they're actually accurate. Patients, so many patients, the anxiety level. And it was just hard to watch. I felt as though some were anxious because they had lost a loved one. They had an actual physical loss. They had lost a grandparent. And all of what was put on us is blaming and shaming if anyone was going out. I kind of wondered if there's many children who felt guilty that could they have brought a germ home? You know, that's going to certainly add to anyone's anxiety. And I saw anxiety that happened because children were wondering if their life was ever going to be normal again. And I saw behavior escalations among vulnerable populations. I'll never forget one little girl I met that came in with her grandmother, and there was a substance use disorder problem in the family, and so the grandmother was caring for her grandchild. But this little girl wanted to spend so much time with me, and we did spend a lot of time together. But later the grandmother said to me, she's just starving for attention and we're locked up and it's the two of us and I can't give her what she needs. And, you know, she had some attentional problems and behavioral problems ahead of time, and they're all getting worse. I mean, so like the best case scenario is everyone was suffering. Cases where there were already issues and problems, those problems escalated. So, you know, now we've covered mental health, we've covered some behavioral health issues, physical health. You know, for a while in the pandemic, we were all congratulating one another, you know, my kids are never sick and this is great and no one's thrown up in a year and how wonderful. And then we all started getting back to some semblance of real life. And I don't know that you'll ever come out with a study on this, but it seemed to me that when kids came back and got sick, they were sicker than I've ever seen them before. In the summer of 2021, we had rampant RSV. Rampant RSV. And, you know, it was like the hospitalization level of RSV was really remarkable. In fact, in my area, Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and I work for them, but I don't speak for them, but Children's Hospital of Philadelphia put out an article in the Philadelphia Inquirer, and they announced that they were full, but they weren't full of COVID. What they were full of was mental health problems and packed with other respiratory illnesses. So I can't say for sure. I don't, how would you ever measure it? But I sort of wondered if these children had like some immunity debt. You know, if you think about it, when you're a pregnant mom, you pass your antibodies on to your child, you're going to have more antibodies for the things that you're exposed to. So if no one saw RSV and rhinovirus and flu and adenovirus and all the other viruses, there's hundreds of them. And then they have a baby, if the baby's not going to have as many antibodies on board, that baby gets exposed and wham, you know, doesn't look so pretty. I saw children with respiratory illnesses that were acting like 6 month olds that got RSV, but they were 2 and 3. And I thought to myself, you know, is it possible that the normal course is you get some exposure to these things when you're younger? And if you don't get it, then you're going to pay later. You know, I guess that's one way I would put it. And I certainly understand the need for shutdown at the very beginning. And for, you know, everyone said 2 weeks to flatten the curve, and that really changed into more than 2 weeks. But to take it out into months, I kind of wonder what it did to people's immune systems physically. It was very interesting too. I knew people when I met them, they told me that they didn't even let their kids out of the house and on the back porch. And I thought to myself, good Lord, the sun, vitamin D, you know, this is not a good scenario. I mean, truth be told, our youngest, he came to us early on and said, you know, I'm not going to thrive well in this. We let him out with 3 friends. As long as the parents agreed, no one was sick, and they all ran. They were cross-country runners. To tell you the truth, it had an extra fringe benefit. They became the front four on the cross-country team, and they made it to the one top runner made it to states that year. And then the next year they all made it to states as a team. And they, you know, several of them are running in college. It's, for them, because they had that opportunity to actually do something, it turned into a huge plus. And, you know, every one of those parents said to me, out of all of my children, this child that got out is the most mentally healthy, and they're physically healthier as well. And then lastly, of course, like the education, you know, parents will mention this to you in passing, but, you know, kids with ADHD lost some of what they had learned. You know, children, I mean, it's really, really sad. We don't think about how much autistic children suffer, right? You know, but they do, and they need that, you know, almost constant practice to be able to thrive and do well and to overcome their obstacles. They weren't getting that. You know, and lastly, I'll throw in the plug for the older kids, you know, the teenagers. Have you ever like had someone break down in near tears and ask you if they're going to be able to go on a date? A 16-year-old? I mean, it's like what I heard from people, you know, young men and women asking, are we ever going to be able to have a normal college experience? And watching what you brought up, you know, like the graduations, we just had two this year. Like, we were very lucky with those. Like our son graduated 2017 high school and then our daughter 2019. And then we didn't have another graduation until this past year. And it was an amazing event. And our oldest then graduated from college. So we missed all the graduation stuff, but our 2019 graduate, COVID shut down her freshman year. And, you know, I feel like for those kids, and then the kids all applying to colleges, it became an issue too. There were so many losses, so many obstacles, and it's easy to think, well, that's nothing, you know, compared to the loss of a life. But I guess, and you can't compare, and I would never take away someone's, you know, horrific loss of life with a loved one. But were children going to school in all cases, or having the choice to go to school, would that have accelerated loss of life among those children themselves? I don't think so.
Thank you, Dr. Mass, for joining us. Now, we have just heard from a medical perspective the effects masks have had on children's health. After the break, we will find out how this is actually affecting them in the classroom. Welcome back. Here on 360 View, we want to give the audience the full view of the subject, hence the name. Now, we have just heard from a pediatrician who believes the effects of the COVID policies on children could last for many years. Joining me now is Dr. Stephen Taylor, a professor and clinical psychologist in the Department of Psychiatry at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, Canada. Now, Dr. Taylor's work focuses on anxiety disorders and related clinical conditions and on the psychology of pandemics. Thanks for joining me, Dr. Taylor.
All right, thank you.
Now, knowing everything we know about the coronavirus today, were decisions made regarding policy and rules with any consideration to the impact it would have on development and mental health?
Given what was known at the time, I think the policies were fine with regard to mask wearing in particular. But of course, for a lot of these things, with COVID-19, there are a lot of uncertainties. You know, it's difficult to extrapolate what happened during the Spanish flu, for example, over a century ago to COVID-19. So clearly a lot of research was needed to be done, including research to determine the safety, efficacy, and tolerability of face masks in young kids.
And do you feel like the younger generations feeling security in the future has been lost? I mean, their entire lives basically came to a halt and were changed almost overnight. What kind of impact can this have?
Yeah, on the one hand, we know that human beings and kids in particular are highly resilient, that people are highly resilient to stresses and people do tend to bounce back. But with COVID-19, it's not clear what will happen in terms of the long-term impact on children. There's no evidence of a long-term impact so far, but COVID-19 is just one of a number of stresses that kids have experienced. Of course, there have been all kinds of other things happening to them, including climate change and all kinds of other things. So only time will tell, but at the moment, it looks like it's not clear that COVID will have any lasting negative impact on kids.
Now, do you believe, in looking at your research around patients, that there is a correlation which can be drawn between the COVID policies which were put in place and the rise in teen suicide and even drug use rate?
It's hard to tie these things down to any one particular thing. I mean, of course, rising drug use is linked to teen suicide. And often in these cases, it's really difficult to determine what was actually the cause, or even indeed whether it was a suicide or an accidental overdose.
Now, in your research, were there countries that you saw who handled the pandemic better, all in regards to the overall health of the young?
That's a really good question. For some countries that seem to do really well, like New Zealand, for example, it's way easier to manage a pandemic in a country that's the size of a mid-sized American city that has a boundary by the sea. So for some countries, it was inherently easier to manage the pandemic than other countries. So again, that's a really difficult question to ask. And I'm not sure there are any clear answers as to whether one country has done better for young people than other countries. Again, it's an issue that only time will tell. My guess is that most countries will come out roughly the same in terms of the impact of COVID on young people.
Now, we are seeing the obvious development changes of following masks. However, do you have concerns about whether there's been effects that have been largely not identified yet, which could also lead to issues down the road?
I think a bigger concern than masks was school closure and kids having to get their education via Zoom. I think that's likely to have a bigger impact than masks because, as you say, it interrupts with not only their education, but their socialization and social and emotional development. Fortunately, that was for a brief-ish period of time. It's hard to say whether that has had any impact on kids. Again, I'd like to reiterate, kids are highly resilient and do tend to bounce back from adversities. And so far, there's no clear evidence of any negative impact of either masks or school closures on kids. But again, it's really too early to tell. Even going back to the issue of teen suicide, it's again too early to tell. The research on suicide has been all over the place during COVID. Some studies have found an increase, some a decrease, some no change. If COVID is anything like, say, SARS or the Spanish flu, we won't know about the impact on suicide until some years afterwards.
So looking into the future, do you believe that mental health will play more of a role in decision making if we are to have another global health crisis in the future?
Nobody remembers the AIDS hysteria back in the 1980s, where there were major mental health problems and all kinds of confusion and misconceptions around HIV. And now we come to COVID-19 and the mental health situation is no better. My worry is that after COVID has gone, or after COVID has become endemic and no longer of great concern, people will return to focus on other things like climate change or other sorts of things, and we'll leave mental health behind. So that's my concern. The things that we've done for mental health during COVID should be preserved and perpetuated in the future. Things like e-health or internet-based resources are very important now and for the future.
So how does one psychologically prepare for a pandemic, both as an adult and as a child?
Well, you know, there are so many uncertainties. There's actually a very good document by the WHO just published. I was involved in some minor way on predicting future pandemics. There are all kinds of uncertainties. I think the big thing for preparation for pandemics and for other sorts of serious world events is to improve your tolerance for uncertainty, because that's one of the big issues. There's so many uncertainties that there are cognitive behavioral methods for people to improve their tolerance for uncertainty and to improve their stress resilience, not just for a future pandemic, but for all the other sorts of challenges ahead, such as those associated with climate change.
Thank you for joining us, Doctor. Children look to their parents to make decisions for them. Some we get right. But in the case of handling the pandemic, time is revealing the adults in the room got it wrong. Physical, mental, and emotional, as well as social development, was greatly reduced by the blanket protocols put in place all in the name of public health. Those who were questioning the science behind putting a piece of cloth over half the face were sadly demonized, even though most were parents themselves who could see the real-time damage being done to their children. Damage for a virus which affected less than 1% of their population at the time. A number which is just a small fraction of youth who decided to take their own life, sadly, during the pandemic. 2 weeks to stop the spread turned into 2 years for many. And sadly, it could turn into 20 years before we know the full consequences. Never before have we seen a time where the long-term effects on children became the least of all concerns. Yet the restrictions and rules which placed seniors in isolation, mixed infected patients in high-risk places like nursing homes, delayed care and testing, denied COVID treatments, which worked and put many on ventilators, only amplified the problems. So were these restrictions really about protecting public health or protecting certain people's wealth? Well, unfortunately, it is the next generation who will be left to pay the bill. I'm Sky Nell Hughes, and this has been your 360 view of the news affecting you. Thanks for watching.